Comments made on Serospectives are those of the individuals and do not reflect the opinions of Serotech, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. We would like to remind you also that we are coming to you from various locations and with various levels of audio quality. Please be patient with the fact that this is a live presentation. Finally, you will hear a tone at various times throughout the event. If you are with us live, this means that content has been put on the screen and you can review it. If you are listening to the audio archive, we encourage you to go to serotalk.com and check out the show notes. Or listen to the archive live and participate as document content is displayed in that format as well. Thank you so much for coming. We're thrilled that we could bring this special to you, and we have some familiar voices for you, the most familiar of those probably being that of Michael Loff, who is back to talk to us about Windows 8. Michael, welcome. I'll let you introduce your guests.
All right, well, thank you very much. Hello, everyone. I have been very passionate about Windows 8. And while I like it, it may not be for everyone. That's what we're going to sort out tonight, the good and the bad and the indifferent, so you can decide if it's right for you. And so joining us tonight on Serospectives, one of our guests, we're still waiting to work on some audio, we have Jeremy Curry with GW Micro. We thank you for joining us this evening. You put out some great information as early as July to kind of help us get our head around the new interface to Windows 8 and how it works and how it looks and how we have to interact just a little bit differently. Thanks for joining us, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's great to be here.
All right. Also here, we're going to pull from Mr. Joe Steinkamp because I know he's been playing around with it for over a year, he said. So he's... Oh, okay. Can you get more enthused there, Mr. Joe?
No. And Michael, thank you. Welcome back. You seem to be our operating systems person of expertise, I think. Another in our continuing line of what goes under the hood, I think.
And I say, I think one of the best things of 2012 has been these two operating systems, Windows 8 and, the Mac Mountain Lion. I just think they've been some good upgrades. We'll see. I don't want to skew the discussion just yet. So I want to, get some takes because everyone has different uses. Your mileage is going to vary. So one of my first questions, I guess, would be ask each of you, what would you say are the pros and cons of Windows 8? First, what do you like about it? What do you think is an enhancement that really makes it worth spending the time and effort to upgrade? And then maybe some cons, some things that you're not happy about that just you think needs some perfection, might take a service pack or something to resolve. I'm going to start with you, Jeremy, because I think you've been playing with it quite a while.
Yeah, I put some stuff out there even around CSUN time just after the very first consumer preview came out. So I've been working with it for quite some time and have seen it go through some fundamental changes. And it's been interesting to see how it's progressed. So some of the pros, one of the things I think is probably a pro is that rather than having mirror drivers out there, you have a new accessibility driver. And so that allows us to do some interesting things that we couldn't do previously. So for example, for low vision users in Windows 7, if you were running a mirror driver and you were running WindowEyes, or another screen reader, and you wanted to run the Windows magnifier at the same time, you came up with this weird glass effect, and it was very difficult to be able to actually use them together, or impossible, I guess some might say. And with the accessibility driver, you have the ability to run WindowEyes or a screen reader and the built-in magnifier at the same time, which is kind of a handy thing. And so that's allowed us to do some new things that we couldn't do previously. It took a lot of work under the hood, but things are like that are always changing. And positive things, it still has a desktop that's very similar to what has been there previously. So all of that is the same. Some of the downsides, I think, I'm not real enthralled with the whole, what we call the start screen or the modern start screen, formerly called Metro. So the terminology changed a lot over even the times that I've been doing presentations. It used to be called Metro UI. Now it's called modern, you know, the modern start screen or modern apps. I just call them the start screen or apps for short, because something can only be modern for so long. But I've had some difficulty traversing some of the apps, even if they say they're accessible. Trying to work your way through them can be a little bit difficult. And I think searching for things is a little bit more difficult too. And in Windows 7, you just typed it in, it popped up, and you down arrowed through everything. And that's not the case anymore with Windows 8. Now you have to decide if it's a setting, is it a file, is it an app, and then you either have to tab to those things or arrow to those things or remember the hotkeys for those things. And so that makes that a little bit more difficult as well. And there are lots of other little UI changes that I'm not real happy about as far as the way they operate. And for those of you who listen to High Contrast, you'll hear some of this on our next episode. But one of the things that I have difficulty with is the lack of an intuitive way to navigate. For example, do you tab or do you arrow? Sometimes you have to tab and arrow. Well, if you can't see the screen, how do you know that? And so there are lots of issues like that. And one example is if you copy a file, I was copying a large file from our network to Windows 8, and the progress bar comes up with a transfer dialog. Well, you can tab around there, and I have just enough sight that if I get really, really close, I can see there are other controls there. Well, I was tabbing around, found out there are other controls, but you can't get to them unless you tab to a certain spot and then arrow to them and then start tabbing again. And one of my biggest things in regards to software design, whenever we're designing WindowEyes, or if I'm consulting people on other assistive technologies on design, is make sure that usability is a priority. And I don't really feel that that was the case here with Windows 8. I feel that Microsoft was really trying to push out a touchscreen environment to a desktop screen environment or a desktop environment. And while that might be great for tablets, that's not the hardware that people have access to right now. So my opinion is I don't really care for it on a traditional desktop or laptop platform. However, if it were on a touchscreen, that might make a difference in my mind, because that's really what it's geared towards. I'm just afraid that Microsoft was trying to retrofit an operating system that was never designed to do this on the hardware that's out there and push it out to millions of users, or plans to, and just expects it to function just like it always has. And I think that that's going to cause them some difficulty, because it's very clearly oriented towards touchscreen use. And obviously everybody out there, or most everybody out there running Windows now, is a keyboard or mouse user. And so I think that just creates its own set of issues. I don't know if I'd go as far to say it's a failure, but I think it's a step in a different direction. And Microsoft certainly has their eye on consistency and being able to compete in the tablet market. That's where they're trying to head. So I'm not sure this is a success. I think it's got a ways to go. I've said that even in my presentation in July. I still think it has a ways to go. But there are people out there who really like it. So that's kind of where I stand on it.
We had a question in the text area. Somebody was remarking on the comment that's been made that Windows 8 is the new Vista. And this seems to be kind of go along with what you're saying about its limitations. I'd be interested to hear opinions as to whether or not you feel it is the new Vista and why. What does that mean?
I've said that on Sarah Talk.
Yeah.
I would disagree with that, because to me, Vista, to me, implies instability. And I don't have that issue with 8. I find 8 to be more stable than any of the operating systems that I've played with, anyway, out of the box. So I'll throw in my pros. There are things that I think are useful, like much more intelligent network detection. If you have printers, maybe you have I have an Aris Media Gateway for my DVR that I can send content to my television sets. That all works great. The ability to switch sound cards and just plug in the auto jack detection, which I used to hate. I know the Realtek cards have had that for a while. That never worked right. But Windows 8 seems to have that down. And one of the big things is if you have older hardware, it runs a lot faster. It's much more efficient. I put it on my netbook, and this thing, it's actually usable now. It runs at a speed I can work with. An old Dell from 2007, same results. So that part of it I like. I guess some of the cons, I would go back and, you know, some of the people calling it Vista, I have to ask, have you even tried it? I you know, a lot of people, the naysayers, you know, you go with what you hear, and there's what you actually put your hands on and what you play with. And I'm not saying it's for everyone. I would be the first to say, if you're using Windows 7 or something and it's working, it's stable, it does what you need, at this point, I would stay away from it. But if you're getting in that situation where, hey, this computer's not working right, I'm crashing a lot, it's time to really either reinstall an operating system, then it's worth thinking about going to Windows 8. And, you know, one of the things that I used it 2 months before, being a member of TechNet, so I had the benefit already of having system access, which has greatly improved since then, but I had that and NVDA. So I had free options to get this thing up and going and, you know, to traverse around it. I've got it on all my computers here. Call me weird. I overall like it. I can't compare it to Vista, because to me, Vista was a headache. It was unstable. It wasn't helped. They added all kinds of third-party software, all these OEMs, and kind of doomed it. It didn't have good drivers out of the box. So I can't compare it all to Vista.
Yeah, where the metaphor works is that to get to Windows 7, we had to go through the road of Windows Vista. Windows 8 feels very much like not exactly where they want to be yet. It feels very revision 1 right now. That's not to say that it's not fit and polished. It's just knowing Microsoft and going through, you know, 10 different operating systems with them, it feels like that this is where they are today and that it will mature and get better over time. I think the comparison doesn't work in that Vista was Longhorn originally, and Microsoft shot for the stars and missed, and eventually had to release something. So they dropped a lot of features, rewrote it from scratch, and kicked something out. But from the ashes of Vista, Windows 7 rose. And you have to think also that it wasn't necessarily a horrible operating system. It's just that Apple did such a great job at making it sound like a horrible operating system. The Mac Switcher ads did a really good job of explaining what were some bad things about Vista. Ironically, all those features they made fun of are now in Mountain Lion, but that's another story for another time. I think Windows 8 positives are that you always can say, is Microsoft all in on something? Are they completely behind something? And Windows 8 is that. Windows 8 is on my Xbox. Windows 8 interface is on my desktop. And Windows 8 is on the phones and things like that. They are way into live tiles. That is the future, and that is what they truly, truly believe in. And the thing that people forget about Microsoft is they use anthropologists. They use all this crazy user data about where people click on the screen and how people interact. I mean, remember the conversation about the ribbon? And the ribbon, it was just horrible and terrible and blah, blah, blah. But Microsoft had reams and reams and reams of information to prove that that UI worked more often than it didn't. And for, you know, older guys like us who, you know, learned it one way, it was very difficult to come around the other side to see if that works. So if anything, Microsoft is has conviction here, and they're going to follow through on it. And I think that's what I think is impressive. Now, some other positive features that Michael didn't cover. You've got Windows Defender, which is vastly improved. You've got Windows Microsoft Security Essentials, which is part of the operating system now. So, you know, you don't have to worry about going to get an antivirus program. It's right there when you start. The logon screen is pretty neat. I mean, it wants you to really put in your user experience, and it remembers more stuff. And from a security standpoint, that hasn't been the case. Microsoft from the word go is looking at this from the ability of following your profiles across different boxes, being able to log in and get all your preferences and references at one given time, and having more eyes on security in the trusted computer platform. So I think in that way, Microsoft has continued to move down the road. Now, what we are looking at in the Mac world is that there is a theory that iOS and Mac are going to one day, OS X, are going to merge. Microsoft jumped ahead of Apple here. This is touch and a desktop squished together for good or bad. And as much as I'm not a huge fan of using this tile interface, as Jeremy has described it with the mouse and keyboard, about a weekend ago, my wife and I went to a Sam's, and there was a bunch of new Windows 8 computers and kiosks and Try Me, Touch Me, and my wife has been using Windows 8 with me. For her, the minute that she could walk up to this Dell XPS that's kind of like a Mac, iMac-looking machine that had a touchscreen on it, for her, the tiles made sense at that point. Because they're begging to be touched. They're begging to be swept. And when I showed her that she could swipe right on the right side of the screen to get to the charm bar, or that there were hot spots in the top corners of each of the screens, or you can minimize it by swiping down, it made sense to her. The same way that you have to show somebody what the app switcher is in iOS the first time. But once when they get it, they don't forget it. And it just becomes part of the learning system. That's the hardest part. Learning where all this stuff is. And one of the best tips we can give you tonight is learn Windows X, because Windows X helps you get around that operating system pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked too much about the touch screen. I think you may have played with it more than anyone, Joe. I ordered one of the Logitech T650s, and I think my Calvo has as well. It's kind of the equivalent to the Magic Trackpad for the Mac, so you have this little glass touchscreen in, but their implementation of it is a little bit different, say, than the way you do it on your iOS device or Android. So I don't know if, Jeremy, have you played with that any?
I have not had the opportunity to play with much of the touchscreen functionality. We've been looking at developing it for WindowWise, because obviously NVDA has some of those items. And I can tell you, and I guess this kind of goes back to some of my disappointments with Windows 8. We have a touchscreen in the office that we use with some of our other equipment. And so we actually were looking at trying to use a touchscreen with it. Well, Windows 8 requires a four or five point. There's a minimum amount of touch points it requires for the touchscreen to work. And so if you have an existing touchscreen monitor, we actually connected our touchscreen monitor that we had in the office, plugged it in, and we thought, we'll start using this to develop. Well, since it's only got 2-point touch, you can't use it. Not only that, but it created an accessibility issue, because we were going to see how well Narrator worked with that touchscreen device. Well, it turns out that if the touchscreen doesn't have the minimum amount of touch points, not only can you not use Narrator with it, Narrator actually shuts down. And so if you've got an older touchscreen that's only got your traditional 2-point touch, then you won't even be able to use Narrator. And so that created some issues in my mind about where it was as far as compatibility or backwards compatibility from the touchscreen side. But as far as the new devices that are coming out, like the Surface, I can't say that I have played with one of those yet. And obviously the Surface Pro isn't out, just the RT version is out, which isn't working with any AT yet. And I think that will bring a different experience to it. And I guess I should mention, I did play with one of the touchscreens they had at CSUN, but they were still very early on in the process this year, so I don't think that's really a fair comparison. But I think that since it's so touchscreen-oriented, that's probably where a lot of people who like Windows 8 are probably going to find, like Joe's wife did, that's where they're going to find it's most intuitive, because that's what it's been designed for.
Yeah, well, I think the verdict's still out. It's a little kludgy. I've tried to play with it both NVDA and Narrator, and so when I get the actual T650, which is a device more dedicated, designed to optimize that, the other point is a lot of The touchpads that people are using, they don't automatically get the drivers, and you gotta go get the drivers before you can do that. The other thing I played with, I don't know if anyone's done much with, is the voice recognition, and that's where Serotech's leading the way with that. I think they've improved it a bit over 7, and I was doing quite a bit. I still don't think it rivals the latest Dragon. I mean, if you're really serious about, you know, writing a novel with your voice, but it is kind of cool to play with. And actually, and you know, my hope was that between the touch screen and voice navigation, maybe we could do some things that either screen reading technology is missing or because it's not, everything's not symmetrical always. So like Jeremy said, it's also sometimes you got to tab before you can arrow to the options. And but the key is getting the shortcuts. And we did find a good link of Windows 8 shortcuts. One of the things I like when it works, but it doesn't always work, is that you can hit the Windows key and enter and launch Narrator if you need it, if you just don't have any speech going and you need to find out what's up on the screen. So where do we go? There's Lisa, any other good questions? I really want to see what concerns people have, because I know there's a lot of people who haven't used it, and I'd like to see where they are with their concerns, if they're going to, based on what they hear, or...
I'm seeing some comments about Windows RT, and not just in the text chat area, but in general. I've heard some confusion. Okay, what's Windows RT? How is it different than regular Windows? Maybe a little discussion about the varieties of Windows 8 would be helpful.
Sure. There's Windows 8 itself, which is kind of like the home version that you're used to, and Windows 8 Pro. So two versions on the desktop, which is nice compared to the umpteenth versions that we've had before in XP and in Vista. That's a great thing. The situation gets a little bit more cloudy when we start looking at it from a portable standpoint, because Windows RT is a version of Windows 8 that can run on the ARM processor. And that means that it has been more designed to be a tablet operating system and giving you a longer time and better battery life. And it's more optimized for those kinds of situations. And that means you don't necessarily have a true traditional desktop in the way that we know it. And that means you have to use what's called the Windows Store apps, or like Jeremy said, formerly called Metro, or whatever they're calling it this week. We still call it Metro. That means that all the apps run in the start screen. It's a type of window that allows these apps to run. And there is a desktop of sorts, but it really is just another window, not the actual desktop we know and love from a traditional Windows machine on Intel. The other positive thing about this is that it comes with Office 2013, so you can actually use Windows RT with Office right out of the box, so that's what you're paying for. I've seen a lot of people kind of take a stab at the pricing and forget that there's a copy of Office on the device, which, you know, is a pretty neat buy if that's what you're looking for. There are USB connections on RT machines, so you can hook up a keyboard and a regular mouse and be able to operate it that way. You can actually still do Windows commands and be able to get to like Windows R and Command Prompt. And if you know your Windows keys, there's a lot of stuff you can actually still do in there. But Windows RT stands for Runtime, and it's a different version of Windows 8. Now, Windows 8 Surface, or Surface RT, is a whole nother thing entirely. Remember all that stuff I just said that was on the ARM version? Well, there's all that in a regular desktop that you would run desktop apps like WindowEyes and System Access and other programs like that. So you would have a tablet per se, but it could run traditional Windows apps, and those are generally going to be Intel-based processors. I do not know if those are going to ship also with Office, because they have not been released yet. They're supposed to show up sometime in January or February. OEM models like the IBM Yoga, the Lenovo Yoga, and some Acer tablets and stuff have started to ship, which have touch screens and allow you to do this kind of functionality. But the actual one from Microsoft is still going to come a little later. The devices have the ability to use what's called the touch cover and the type cover. I couldn't remember this the other day on High Contrast, so I had to go look it up. The touch cover is a regular keyboard that you can actually sort of type on, and I've heard from people that it feels really good. It doesn't feel like you're tapping on glass. And then there's the more traditional pushy key touch typing type cover. And like what happens with other tablets, you can actually slide these things on with magnets, like the smart covers on an iPad, And that connects and allows you to use it like a bit of a traditional laptop. In fact, some people are using them as laptop replacements because they get the best of both worlds. They get the ability to use a touchscreen, and they have the ability to use this as a regular traditional laptop. The prices are all over the place, and where it comes down to is if you want something to be affordable and more of a tablet experience, you'll look at Windows RT, and right now the only screen reader on that is Narrator. And there is an actual hotkey to be able to launch Narrator from a Windows RT tablet. I think it's the Windows key in the up on the volume control. I'd actually have to double check that. But that's how you can actually launch Narrator on a key. One of the ways to use Narrator best, and I've recommended this to those who want to start playing with Windows 8 in any mode, is to go and put in settings, go and put the checkbox in read under pointer, because that tends to have Narrator read a lot better, especially just using a mouse. If you're not sure, like Jeremy's example not too long ago about it not reading some of those areas that he could see visually, I found with Narrator that occasionally if I've had that pointer enabled, read under pointer, I can move my mouse to the left and it'll actually read some of that text that I normally couldn't get over to.
You know, one of the things I had to comment on with Microsoft, regardless of the accessibility standpoint, they had to come out with something that was going to compete with the iPad. And the Surface was a good idea, but it is a bit disappointing that they chose to go with strictly just an ARM processor, because that's what's really restricting us as AT vendors trying to get software that will work on it, because it's an entirely different processor than what you're used to in your desktop. So that's why there's not AT on it yet. Who knows if there will be. I think it depends on if there's actually a successful version of the RT. If it fails, then you won't have AT come out on it ever. But it was a good idea to be able to compete with the iPad. I think some of the issues you may see with that might make it kind of fall on its face is it's only available at the Microsoft store. Well, I live in Indiana, which isn't a huge state, but I think there are only like two Microsoft stores in this entire state. It's not like you can just go down to your local Best Buy and put your hands on one like you can some of the Apple products. And I don't know if that's going to cause the demise of Windows 8 RT Surface, but it certainly doesn't help promote it, especially those of us who are visually impaired who like to actually go and put our hands on something before we purchase it. It's going to be difficult to do that. And I don't know, Joe, if you've heard, are there plans to change that? Last I heard, that's the only outlet they were going to have, besides online, of course.
Well, remember, this is the company that made the Kin and killed it in 49 days, as Buddy reminded me. You never know, you know? I was listening to Windows Weekly today, and they were talking about the Sinofsky departure, and they were talking about some of the changes in that. Windows Phone's original plans was to be Silverlight. And be a Silverlight RT before that was kind of sort of abandoned in 7 and 7.5. It's not known how Microsoft will approach this. Only Microsoft knows. One of the downsides about everybody wanting to be like Apple is that nobody says anything. And in assistive technology, that means you're a lot more reactionary than you are pro-actionary anymore, because there's this need to have a surprise or this need to come out of nowhere. There were things that Microsoft was lighting up 2 weeks before actual general availability. We were getting questions here at our company, Serotech, about, okay, well, it's gone to RTM, so can you talk about your support? Nope, can't talk about it till general availability. And people are like, no, it's the same thing. No, it really, really wasn't. The operating system changed over time, literally changed over the year. And part of the reason why I give this kind of sarcastic, flippant answer when asked about Windows 8 is that I've been riding this train for a while now, and I'm just kind of in a moment of, oh good, at least it's out. Because things like this, are finally locked in stone, because there were things that we had that worked in tech preview that didn't work in consumer preview and then came back. And so they were doing things under the hood, and it's their right to. I mean, this is something big for them. People always pick on Microsoft and say they never change. They're the stick in the mud. They're stodgy. They don't get it. Why can't they learn from Apple? Then they turn around and do it, and then they get kicked in the teeth. And I don't think that's extremely fair. Where I think Windows Surface, not necessarily Windows RT, but where I think Windows Surface, the pro version, will really kick in is in enterprise. BYOD, bring your own device, is very popular right now because it allows a company not to have to buy a tablet for somebody. And they just go, oh, I want to use an iPad. Okay, we'll go buy the iPad and we'll just get IT to hook you up into it. There's some downsides to that. The way that Apple does their user information, the way that they do security. If you listen to TripleClick now, Pete has talked about this. So if you listen to tripleclickhome.com, the way that anybody who's used iTunes at a hotel knows that that's not a good thing to do on a public Wi-Fi, because a lot of things can be seen. There's a lot of things that companies don't necessarily want going through iCloud. IBM famously, not too long ago, about a month ago, said, look, we're no Apple stuff whatsoever. We're going to keep this all locked down because we don't know where that stuff goes. That's kind of the beauty of Windows 8 and Windows Surface, is that an IT department can ghost it, can, you know, format it, can VPN it, can lock these things down with group policy. This is the tablet that they've wanted to be able to give out to people to make sure that their information doesn't get out of the organization. And I think that's where you'll see some adoption over time, because in an enterprise situation, Microsoft will be pushing very hard to sell these devices and sell these copies and get them out there. And there's organizations who are leaving BlackBerry who need this security and will openly take that. Where it will come into a problem is training, you know, because you cannot get the start menu back, not officially. You get the start screen and that's going to be the start screen. Yes, there are hacks. Yes, there are ways to put that back. But understand that if you do that, that's not the way Windows was meant to run. And if so, if something breaks, then you're going to have to uninstall that to see if it was that hack that, you know, caused that problem, or was it something that was outside of what the hack did and caused you to crash? And that's always the problem. And I use lots of the technology at defaults because that's the way that most people are going to get their computer. They're not necessarily going to go in and do a lot of crazy customization. And that's where your mirror driver thing is important, Jeremy, because we don't have Aero anymore. We don't have the 3D, you know, gradient mirror on a window on top of window, shadows, all this other stuff. They flattened out the UI a lot. But what we did get in return was live tiles. And live tiles means that you could have the mail tile change the number of emails that are pending for you. And that does that dynamically on the fly. Weather does that. A lot of the Bing apps do that. And so you have to be able to know that that information has been communicated to the user. And we actually updated system access to be able to read those live tiles in most of the situations where you have the built-in apps. Now, let me get to one quick thing, though. The thing about tiles, and I don't know if Michael ran into this or not, is it's very much like ribbons, right? Let me describe a grid. You've got column A with three boxes going down, and then to the right of it are two big rectangles. Let's just call that column 2 or column B, right? Column C is another three boxes stacked on top of each other going down, and column D is the same thing. In a lot of Windows 8 screens, you can have a grid look just like that. And if you're up at the top left of column A in the top left box and you arrow right, I can't always say consistently that you will be in the rectangle in column B at the top. And I can't always say that if I'm the middle one, I'll go to the top. I may go to the bottom one. And if I'm on the bottom one and I arrow again just for discovery, I can't say that in column C where I'll land in those three stacked boxes. And that is consistent on the Xbox as well. So at least that part of the UI is consistent in its inconsistency. And it's why learning discovery is going to be very difficult. One of the things that I just found recently was that I can just type in mail from the start screen, hit enter, and it'll take me into mail. So anything like the Microsoft Xbox Kinect, if it's visually seen, if it's a command that's there, you can actually type it in and it'll take you right to it in a lot of searches. But did you have any problems with that in discovery, Michael?
That's one of the things. I see a little bit of that. It is inconsistent in that way. What I want to talk about, since both of you work for screen reader manufacturers and you brought it up, is the ability to update and stay up on dynamically changing content. That's so important with websites these days. And that's what some of the apps are doing. You got news tickers and sports tickers and things. So I'll start with you, Jeremy. You want to talk about kind of what, how you've addressed that in your support for IE10, or just kind of where Windows 8 itself lends
sure.
tools to help authors of accessibility software make that dynamically changing content available to us.
Sure. Let me kind of back up just a little bit, because Joe made a really good point too that kind of plays into this whole concept of trying to get this information. He talked about the tiles and the start screen, which are, again, geared towards a sighted touchscreen user. They're like these big blocks, so you could just take your finger and tap on them, but trying to arrow through them makes it inconsistent. And so one of the things that we did inside of WindowEyes is you can use your insert and arrow keys so that you can move through everything logically. So for example, if you're in a column and you go down to the bottom of the column, you're not guaranteed to go to the top of the next column. And if you do, you may even miss some of those items. But if you use your insert and arrow keys with WindowEyes, it'll logically get all of those things, which is something I thought should have been inherent in the UI to begin with. But, you know, it's one of those things. And then because of this way the search works, because there's no way to do first letter navigation, we made what's called a page navigation dialog. So you do an insert tab, and this dialog comes up that takes all the tiles and puts them into a tree view so you can use first letter navigation. And these are the types of things I think we all have to think of as end users that really validate third-party AT in this instance. Now, when you go to those tiles, Joe mentioned live tiles and Michael mentioned dynamic content. Just like Joe mentioned, we've made it so that you can actually have those live tiles spoken. So if you sit on a tile and it presents information and it says, you know, Google just gained 1 point on the stock ticker, if it comes out, you'll be hearing it. And then if something else changes, you'll be hearing it again. And so if somebody's made those live tiles accessible, we can read all those things. And then additionally, if you use IE10, you're going to have a lot of available ARIA markup that's going to be available in for us in WindowEyes 8, which is in its second public beta. And I've demonstrated quite a bit of that on gwmicro.com/beta in some of our Guess What series. But ARIA, meaning Accessible Rich Internet Applications, it's a way to make applications accessible on the web with dynamic content. So if you listen to some of those Guess What's that I've done, you can go to a page, for example, like Yahoo, and go to their search, type in their search edit box, and as soon as a list of suggestions is up, the web developer of Yahoo has made it so it says, there's a list of suggestions, press the up or down arrow to go through the list, which is pretty cool. Other content that's being pushed out in what we call ARIA live regions. There's an example of a test page that I've given of a basketball game where the scores are being updated on this page. Well, focus isn't at that spot on the web page, but it updates as those things change, which those are the types of things that we all have to deal with as blind and visually impaired users. And so we've been trying to put a lot of effort into being able to make sure that those things function. So that does a really good job in IE10, which has been out under IE8. And then just, was it yesterday or the day before, they put out IE10 for Windows 7 as well. And then Firefox supports them. It doesn't quite seem to do quite as well as IE10, but it supports them to a pretty decent extent now. But the live regions seem to work best from IE10 from what I've seen. And so those things, along with the live tiles and all these dynamically changing places, are things that I think are our biggest hurdle right now, trying to make sure that we have access to those things. I think, Joe, you and I have talked about Facebook. You know, Facebook isn't a web page. It's more of an app, and it changes on a daily basis. You know, you've got five different parts to it, and sighted people get upset that it changes on a daily basis, and it's hard to keep up with technology like that. That's one of the reasons we created our app interface, to try and push out those apps quick to people, by like WindowEyes apps, not Windows 8 apps. So it's it's a challenge, I think, right now, and it's a big hoop that we all have to go through, and it's going to get better with time, just like the web did when it first came out, and it's still evolving. And as my my good friend and co-owner GW always says, Doug Joffrey said, the great thing about standards is that there are so many to choose from. And that's the problem we face right now. You've got ARIA and then other HTML5 stuff, another W3. It's kind of crazy. It's like, well, you have to work with all of them because nobody can seem to just pick one and go with it. And so that's a big challenge.
It's the battle of what is the internet and what is the web and what is your experience? Is it an app or is it through the web? Or is the web then providing you that experience? And everybody's trying different ways. I mean, certainly one of the things that got leveled at Microsoft was there aren't that many apps in the App Store yet. Well, in a lot of ways, Microsoft kind of curated that. They did that on purpose. They wanted a lot of good apps right there. And then because their philosophy was the numbers will come, there's a lot of bloat in Play Market and iOS app stores. Everybody has their 101 fart apps. But really, does it have the apps you're looking for? And if not, the upside is that you still can go to the Surface or Windows 8 itself and use all the desktop apps you've always had and maybe never, ever, ever go into the Windows App Store. Now, this also brings up another thing, and this is kind of where Apple influenced Microsoft again. You do have Windows Update, the traditional Windows Update that you know, and then you have a Windows Updates in the Windows Update Store or the Windows Store Update. And that takes a little getting used to maneuvering around too, because it too carries over the tile philosophy, and you're faced with a grid of say 9 icons, and your first thought is to think of it like a list box and just arrow down, and you'll hear something that'll be really weird, like, you know, 6 of 9, and you're like, huh, wait a minute, 7 of 9, that was the Star Trek character? No. So you have to kind of tab around and learn a little bit. And it's no different than being an iOS and having to run your fingers across the screen, because flicking won't get you everywhere. You can't flick your way through life, as I jokingly say on staff. You have to start to learn these interfaces.
Apps.
Yes, from a visual standpoint.
Have adopted to use app. Do much in the store. I must say, I really haven't adopted the App Store as somewhere that I really go yet.
It's depressing because there's an accessibility checker, and there was a lot of consternation about that. But some things have gotten through with an accessibility of yes that make no sense to me. Like Half Brick has a game called Fruit Ninja where you swipe at fruit that flies up in the screen. It has an accessibility of yes. Not exactly sure where that is and how that is. So one of the features that I thought was going to be really cool was that they have this thing called the accessibility checker that looks for certain flags and gives you the impression that this should work better with assistive technology of various kinds. And that's the other side of this is they're looking at it from a lot of different access technologies at once, switches and other things like that. It's not just blindness or low vision. And so you have to do a little bit of research and not just download it because it said, yes, accessibility. And it's like, woohoo, you know. So that may change over time. App Store restrictions may change, or the way that apps are promoted or checked may change. It's still very, very, very new, and anybody who wishes to come on board has to understand that this is the early adopter phase, and Microsoft reserves the right to do strange things for at least the first 90 days of any Windows. So there's going to be a lot of turmoil and downloads, and one of the reasons why we don't do on SPN deep dives, because we get requests all the time for tutorials and go really deep and show me. The problem is now that that's just not possible. By the time we produce it, record it, upload it, it can be out of date. It could completely change. iTunes 11 is a perfect example. People who've been doing a lot of demos and stuff about how to use iTunes, well, you might have to redo a lot of that stuff when iTunes 11 comes out, because these things are just so quickly, dynamically changing. That again, you have to be in a reactionary mode. And one of the great things about Windows is that there is a GW Micro, there is a Serotec, there is a Freedom Scientific, there is an NVDA, there is a Dolphin. There are people who are coming up with new and innovative ways to do all of this. And the days of having one screen reader just aren't going to cut it anymore, because you're going to find that some of us work better in certain ways than others.
That has definitely been the finding, that people are grabbing screen readers to do different things. One of our guests, who I guess has some audio issues, can join us here. That's what he talked about, is he used one screen reader for the store navigation of the store and another one for the touch screen. And but what about content partners? Because, you know, what good is an operating system? You do this stuff if you don't have the actual content to go with it. Are Microsoft making some good strategic partnerships? I saw ABC just put an app in there so you can see their shows. I don't know if it's accessible. I need to download it and see. So what are we seeing there?
You know, I haven't tried some of the apps that I've seen from ABC, but a few apps that I've tried have been, I think, at least a good effort, and some of them are very well done to be able to have access to them. And of course, you still have all of your access to all of your traditional Windows programs that are out there. And I don't think we covered this, so maybe it's worth mentioning, but you have your apps, which are there by default as tiles, but you also have programs. You might hear people call them desktop applications or desktop programs, or I think the official terminology is programs, but I'm not certain. It's kind of like Metro or whatever they want to call it this week. But for example, you've got Internet Explorer, the program, which is the IE that we've all been using, and you've got Internet Explorer, the app that's out there, which is different than Internet Explorer, the program. So Internet Explorer, the program, is going to have your menu in it. Internet Explorer, the app, is not. It's designed more for the touchscreen interface. They both use a similar engine, and you're going to see screen readers work with both of them in the exact same fashion. But you have to be able to know that, because depending on which one you want to open is depending on how you're going to access it. So like by default, I go to the desktop to access Internet Explorer, the program. Excuse me. Well, if I want to go to Internet Explorer, the app, then I can do that very easily through the start search. And every time we talk about this, it's very confusing because we've never had apps in Windows before. It's always been apps on Apple devices. And so now we've got both in one environment, and it's going to be confusing just like RT is. And so there's a learning curve people are going to have to overcome. But I think it's important to remember, I would not consider this the leading edge. I'd consider this the bleeding edge of technology for those of us who kind of date ourselves with that technology. We're kind of past the forefront right now. And so as Joe said, things are going to be changing over the next 90 days or more. So I think we're going to see a lot of confusion, but after a lot of this gets out into the marketplace, it'll finally start to standardize just like everything else does with Windows.
There have been questions on the text chat about where do you go to learn this stuff? Are there podcasts? And I would encourage people to check out the show notes. We do have a list of books on Bookshare on Windows 8. If you are a SAMNet member, we have a Windows 8 forum. There are various email lists that discuss Windows 8. And there are podcasts. Some like this will give you more specifics. I know that on the Serotalk podcast, we've discussed some of the trends and the philosophies behind Windows 8. But would you say that it's a safe bet that the more that this becomes widely adopted, the more information there will be available?
Yeah.
Definitely encourage Bookshare. There's five, last time I was there, five great books. Each has different, some are warm, newbie, beginner, some really get into the guts, get you under the hood. I learned about all kinds of cool things, like you can back up. It has ability, you can, if you want to sell your computer with Windows 8 on it, you can restore it to a brand new clean copy of Windows 8. I think that's a pretty cool feature. There's, you can do a backup, but it's not quite what the way I like a backup, but you make a .wim file, and you can take it back to a previous date and time with all the software and apps that you were using at that time, Although you have to reconfigure the settings for each. I'm not quite sure. Maybe that's a stability thing, but it's just a lot of cool things you can learn by, you know, reading books if you're so inclined. I mean, if you really want to get under the hood, because it does a lot that you won't see on the surface. You know, a lot of people installed it and said, well, I don't really see anything different. Well, you're not until you really start poking around or reading and finding all those hidden gems.
Absolutely. Another question that someone asked was, what are the system requirements for installing and how are they different from Windows 7?
Well, there's that touchscreen.
Yeah, that little thing there.
Yeah, we talk about this a little bit from the low vision standpoint on the December version of High Contrast. Jeremy and I go into much more of a low vision take on it. This is very much back to what I used to call up when I was doing Windows trainings for the state of Texas of Windows Vista ready, Windows Vista capable, Windows Vista compatible. The scenarios that Michael listed earlier on the show have been very positive. My situation with AMD laptops using ATI chipsets for video have been less than stellar because the legacy drivers for those machines went off the cliff around Windows 7, a little bit before Windows 7. So you need to check and make sure that your older hardware can roll to Windows 8 and that you do have driver support. That is very, very, very important, especially for those of you who still use SoundBlast or XFi cards. Because there's still sometimes a little bit of wonkiness I've found in the classic Vista bug where sound just never comes until you run the drivers.
Yeah, that's I want to echo that because I had a problem with a Sony. I blew one up, and of course Sony BIOS aren't really good with a lot trying to do multiple AT as I've found after discussing with other people. But yeah, it's very important that not all hardware are you going to have positive results. I mean, I found in a situation where someone, if you're not careful, you could end up with two operating systems and a boot menu and none of this talks. So nope. I would encourage, yeah, oops. I mean, generally the upgrade process is pretty straightforward. It works pretty good. But I would encourage, and I'm just one of those geeks, I copy the files to the hard drive rather than running the disk, because if you run the disk and you lose speech and you just... You know, yeah. Don't watch what you're doing. You end up with Windows 8 and Windows 7 and a boot menu, and maybe one of them boots and one of them doesn't, but you don't have speech at this point. So without some eyeballs, you could find yourself in a quandary. So again, it's not and for everyone. I bleeding edges.
Along term. With that, though, and it always takes at least 7 months to a year for the hardware manufacturers to catch up with what they can do with Windows. There's a version of DirectX that's in Windows 8, that's exclusive to Windows 8. And if you look at, say, Internet Explorer 10, which Jeremy talked about, that's Windows 7 and up. Office 2013, that's Windows 7 and up. If you're not on the Windows 7, Windows 8 lifestyle in Windows, you're not going to be moving to the latest versions of anything, because Microsoft has, you know, started to put their feet down. And for those of you who are still holding on to Windows XP, do understand that you need to be off that operating system by April 2014 because the hackers are going to have a field day when Microsoft stops supporting it. And a lot of AT and AV manufacturers are going to have the same problems because now we're facing down the barrel, technically today, of four versions of Windows. And that's just not possible. We're talking about four versions of Windows. We're talking about four versions of Internet Explorer, in some cases 32 and 64-bit, and three versions of Office. That's a lot, and somebody will get voted off the island. So my best recommendation is to sit and wait. If you don't need a new computer, there is nothing wrong with Windows 7. It is going to be the new XP for several years. There are some compelling things in Windows 8, but like a phone, it's usually better to adopt an operating system when you buy the new computer. And that's how most people really do that. It was very shocking to me that Microsoft sold 4 million upgrades in 3 days. That was like, wow, there are Windows fanboys. I forgot about that. But there aren't a lot of things that I can tell you today to make you run out and get this. Also, some people have already started to say, well, I'll wait for the next one. I'll wait for the next bus to come. There's a lot of talk in developer communities that Microsoft may adopt, and this is purely rumor and speculation, may adopt a yearly update very similar to Apple, and that you might be seeing maybe not Windows 9, but you'll be seeing updates to Windows 8, kind of like the way you used to be able to get the plus packs in Windows XP. Also, that's not a surprise either, because if you look at the multiple versions of Office 2013 that are available, the subscription model that allows you to be able to have Office 2013 on an Android, an iOS phone, or an iPad or something like that, and a Windows device, those actually will get features and updates that will not come in the boxed copy of Windows, of Office 2013. So there's going to be some more confusion coming down the line, because Microsoft's desire is to get away from these big, massive, huge, 3-year releases and get people more adjusted to the idea that there is no version number. There's just Office.
Well, we're down to our final 5 minutes, so I want to see, I'll start with Jeremy, see if you have some thoughts, maybe some issues that we haven't covered, or we want to get some input from other users to see if they kind of share your view.
I think we've covered a lot of ground. I've been kind of watching the text chat, and I can tell there's some confusion on RT and some of those things. I maybe we should have covered that a little bit more in depth. I thought Joe did a really good job, but just kind of to reiterate, if you're out there and looking at Windows 8 and you are going to run third-party AT on it, stay away from RT, because it's not going to work. Maybe it will at some point, but currently it is not going to function. So if you're going to go with Windows 8, just stay away from RT. Go with Windows 8 Pro or one of the other versions that will work with it. If you have the ability to try it before you buy it, if you're thinking about it, I would look at it. When people are calling me and asking if they should jump to Windows 8, I'm telling them to stick with Windows 7. I think that Windows 8 has a long ways to go, but there are those of us who, like myself, who are geeky and always want to try the latest stuff, whether it works or not. Michael, you've had a really good experience with it. I think that's great. I have a lot of issues with the start screen and navigation and some of those changes that I just think make things less intuitive. And so I think my general consensus for when I'm talking to people and when I'm kind of talking with some of our developers is, if you can stay with Windows 7, do it. If you're on XP and you need to get to something that is latest, just like Joe was saying, get to 7, because XP is going away, and I know there are a lot of XP users out there still. Otherwise, if you feel comfortable with Windows 8 based on what we've all talked about tonight, go for it. But I think it's got a long ways to go. But just like anything else, it'll get there. Things aren't perfect the very first time they ship. Otherwise, we wouldn't have different version numbers. We'd all be at version 1.0, and we'd all be happy as a clam. So that's kind of my take on it, where I stand with things.
Working for a screen reader manufacturer, what are you telling people? Are you saying stay away from it unless you get a new box and you're fine, you support it, or embrace it? Or if you're geeky, embrace it? Or... because someone made the good point that, if you use X, if you're upgrading from XP, it's going to be a culture shock. But if you're going from 7 to 8, it's maybe no different than analogous to an upgrade to a Mac version, where they move a few things around and add a few features and change accessibility.
Minus that start screen, though, and learning that there is the charms bar and still application key. Knowing that you have application context-specific settings. And we didn't even delve into that. If you go back and listen to Jeremy's description from the presentation in July, the charms bar is another place where you have some of those settings, which is Windows and the C key. And knowing that those options change no matter what Windows app you're in. Because really, again, we're back to two operating systems in one. It's kind of iOS and OS X at the same time. If you can kind of sort of get into that and understand that there are some things that don't work anymore the way you're used to, like first letter navigation in the start screen, and you're willing to learn these things or learn the shortcuts for these things, then you will have a better time of it. I don't recommend operating systems for the company, but I have personally said, and I have said on Serotalk, that I am using Windows 7 on my desktop primarily for three major reasons. One, magnification programs haven't caught up with Windows 8 yet. So as a low vision user, I'm kind of sort of waiting for some of these low vision programs to catch up. That's not to say that Windows Magnifier ain't bad. It's pretty doggone good. But I'm a creature of habit and I'm used to certain things in certain programs. So I kind of want those features so I can, you know, do it more often. So I've learned Windows 8 from a screen reader point of view, straight up. It's the first operating system I've not cheated and used my vision to try and learn. The second thing is, again, if you have some critical programs, you really do need to decide if those are going to work well in Windows 8. You may have to go to their support pages and, you know, review to make sure that those are working okay, or if you have to go to compatibility mode and do that fun stuff. So you want to make sure that it's that those are working okay. And the third thing is you want to make sure that your assistive technology of choice is going to provide you what you think you're going to need in that new operating system. And please give it a little bit of leeway, because we're all still learning as this new operating system goes. And that is, again, not a slight on any company that we've mentioned. It is the way of things with Windows. It really hasn't been in our nature as blind individuals, as a blindness community, to run and adopt the latest and greatest of anything. In fact, in Windows XP, Jeremy, if I'm not wrong, it took like 7 months before we had some things working in XP.
Yeah, exactly.
So the fact that some people feel the need, like iOS or Mac, to jump to the latest version because it is the new hotness, can catch you off guard if you're not willing to put in the time to learn it. I'm just in a situation of Windows 8 burnout because I see it everywhere. Even when I go to relax, there it is on my Xbox. So I can't get away from it. So when I make these sarcastic comments, as I am apt to do on these podcasts, it really is not from the fact that I don't dislike the operating system. It's just that for me, I'm having to carry around a lot of mental baggage between all these different versions of Windows at one given time. And when anybody asks me a question, I have to play 50 questions with them to be able to troubleshoot their issue. And so now Windows 8 means I've got to sit down and think about it for a second, or roll over to my laptop and try and replicate, because it's not intuitive. Even though I've been using it for a year, there's still some issues that are not intuitive to me. And I still use like Windows pause break to get to my system area before I even really started using Windows X. Or certain keys that you've always used. If you're a good keyboard user in the desktop, you'll be fine. Windows M, in fact, get out of that start screen and start, you know, going there. And what I said to somebody was, remember when we used to say, don't put all those desktop shortcuts on the desktop. Don't put all those, you know, there's 55 icons on your desktop. That's taking up memory. Nah, if you want first letter navigation back, I would put 55 icons on your desktop, because that's going to allow you to get around to things a lot quicker if you're not sure at first.
Yeah, wow, final thoughts. I would say if it's something you really want to play with, maybe best if you got a second machine, you know, instead of just throwing it right on your primary machine. I mean, I've done it, but I'm a little crazy. I'm not the typical user, you know, and I've got backups, and I have tools like Casper. I can roll. I can go between Windows 7 and Windows 8 in 10 minutes if I need to. So that not everyone has afforded that capability. So, you know, again, it's something, you know, if everything's working great for you, leave well enough alone. If you've got some older hardware that's really sluggish and maybe you want to bring it back to life, a netbook or something, you know, you could consider Windows 8. Especially if you're going from 7, it's a noticeable improvement. Now, if you're going from XP to 8, maybe speed-wise, you may not notice that. If you're having issues with hardware, you don't like playing with that stuff, and you just want a quick and simple, quick and dirty home network where you can share documents and your printer and pictures and music and stuff, that stuff's really improved a lot. If you do a lot of stuff with sound, you know, where you're switching sound devices and hate to have to keep going back into the mixer settings, you know, Windows 8 does a little better job about it. Assumes when you plug a sound device in, you want it to be your default. That's why you plugged it in. So there's always, that's always a you know, a double sword there because
did you play with it with virtual though, Michael? Did you play with it in a Mac situation or VMware?
I've done that as well. I've got six variations of it. I've got it in Mac as VMware. It runs pretty well. I have a Focus issue that's more VMware, I think, than Windows 8, but no, it runs great. I've got it on both Intel and AMD. I've got it on a netbook. I've got it on a pretty fast 64. I will say 64 definitely noticeably better than 32, or faster. I wouldn't say better. The accessibility seems a little different between 32 and 64. At least now, keep in mind, I was playing with it before the 2 months before almost everyone was, so my observations might be a little skewed there, but anyway, they're mine just the same. But 64, it runs great. I've been impressed with the speed and functionality, but 32 is fine. What I'm saying is if you have 64, go ahead and install a 64-bit version. You seem to have both a 32 and 64-bit IE. I recommend the 64-bit. To me, seems to be a little more accessible. I think that's the one that does the full screen, maybe. I'm not sure. But I don't know. I could go on and on, but I like it. So if you're a geek, you want to play around with something and play with the latest and greatest, go for it. If you like to things that and love and want that consistency and really not up to the challenge of learning to do things a little differently, you know, the hotkeys is always the goal. You mentioned the Command C for the charm, but also Command I is a good one. Windows key I is a good one for pulling up all your settings, and you down arrow and then you tab through each of those to kind of configure it the way you want. There's some annoyances like file types by default. It doesn't play.
Oh, yes.
But there's a good
MP3.
Article. If we don't have it, I'm going to make sure Lisa's got it there in her show notes. So there's a good way to make sure that Winamp plays your MP3s and not this crappy little built-in media player with button that doesn't do you a lot of good. So
highlight that format and application key on it, and there's a great file association menu in there too. So yeah, definitely.
I know that
will throw you.
Yeah, I know I should, but I want to play with this 8 start button that everyone's talking about just to see if I blow up accessibility. We'll find out the hard way, but thank God for backups. So. But I don't know, those are my views. You know, play with it if you feel daring and bold. I have not had too many issues, but some folks have. Some have gotten themselves, like I talked about before, where they end up with a dual boot and no speech and needed to have some eye. So don't do it on your main machine. I think that'd be one of my main settings. But if you go out and get a brand new Windows box or your system's unstable and it's time to upgrade, and that's probably why Microsoft, I think you got that $40 deal is only good through the end of January or February, isn't it? It's not, that may depend on adoptability.
End of January 31st. Also, if you have, I believe if you have, what is it, Windows 8 Pro, you can get Media Center for free until then. Then it comes into being a $9.99 download, I believe. So there was a lot of conversation about Windows Media Center, was it being killed off and was it available? And they're giving that to Windows Pro users, I believe, until the end of January. Paul Thurrott and the Windows Super Site, winsupersite.com, WinSupersite.com, is a great place to catch up on a lot of info. I'll throw it up here. I have GW up here now, but let me throw up the Win Super Site if you guys have never been there before. That's that and Windows Weekly on the Twit Network. Especially the latest episode, 287, group therapy session, talks a lot about the Steven Sinofsky exit and what that means for Microsoft. And Michael, thank you for offering to host tonight. And Jeremy, thank you for coming in and hanging with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been great, guys.
Yes, I thank all of you. And stay tuned. Lots of good stuff coming up on the Cyril Talk Podcast Network. And Cerospectives, and of course, they have their monthly reviews. So with that, we can hand it back to Lisa if you have any closing comments. But thanks a lot for having me, and enjoy Windows 8. It's usually great.
Thanks very much to Michael and Joe and Jeremy for an excellent discussion. I would like to encourage you, if you want to continue the discussion, to come on to Samnet if you are a member. If not, please feel free to sign up for a free trial. We have a chat after each of these in the tech chat room, and we talk tech and often many other things as well. We'd love to have you join us. Thanks so much for listening, and please do join us the first week in December for Cerospectives, when we will be talking about the news that made history for the month of November. Thanks for listening.